Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Every political ball is in the air right now in Ohio, everything but president. Every statewide office is up for election, including one of the state's two Senate seats. The economy appears not to have regained its footing despite economic forecasts, but voters aren't blaming the governor, strangely. Still, it's the most important issue on most voter priority lists. So on Tuesday, the governor puts forth his second State of the State address. And just a day before that, the president of the – well, no, wait. On Tuesday, just a day after, the president of the United States will do the same for the country. And we're all wondering, what will Ohio Governor Ted Strickland bring to the table, and what will his GOP opponent John Kasich have to say? To answer those and several other questions, we've invited to the studio Ohio Statehouse News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Thanks for being here.
Oh, very glad to be anywhere.
On time on a Monday.
There you go.
Plain Dealer Bureau Chief Reggie Fields. Reggie, thanks for being here. It's your first time.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. And Columbus Dispatch Statehouse reporter Jim Siegel.
Good to be back.
Thanks for being here. Jim, why don't we just kick off with the story that was splashed across the front page yesterday, the Dispatch Ohio poll, Ohio newspaper poll, showing that Kasich leads Strickland just a bit, you know, statistically only a little bit. What does it all mean?
Well, it means voters are just – they're unhappy. I mean, they don't like the way things are going. The unemployment rate continues to rise. Foreclosures continue to rise. They're just not happy with the people in charge right now, regardless of who that is. I don't believe the voters know much about John Kasich yet. There's really no reason that they would. He hasn't even been in elected office
unless
for a while.
Unless they Twitter.
I mean, some have probably seen him on Fox News. I'm sure that's helped with his Republican base. I'm sure there are a number of Republicans who know him. But as far as independents or even some of the Democrats who are saying they'll vote for him, I think that is just more, they're just not happy with the way things are going. And I think a key number in that poll showed that when they asked, are you better or worse off than you were 4 years ago, I think it was 9% said better, and I think 44% said worse.
But when you break it down in the other numbers, it shows that more people are in some ways better off. Their wages are up. In the breakouts.
Well, that's possibly. But I don't know if they're – I don't know who they all talk to, but I don't think there's a feeling that they're better off.
Right. Well, what about the fact, though, that most people, or at least a small majority, are close enough to – I mean, not a majority, but close enough to half – don't blame the governor for the economy?
Well, that's interesting because, I mean, usually you blame whoever's in charge at the time, but most folks, I think, are realizing it. And Strickland will put this out as a major theme of his campaign is that, look, I can't be blamed for a federal economic meltdown. I'm the governor of Ohio. We go up and down with the rest of the economy. Unfortunately for Ohio, for a number of couple decades now, we've gone. We don't go up as high when it goes up. We go down lower when it goes down. So, and that's something that has gone on for several governors now.
Yeah, a couple years ago, though, he said he was going to turn Ohio around. Reggie, what do you think?
Well, you know, it's those very words, that phrase that he used during his campaign that's being used against him at this point by his opponents. And clearly, as Jim said, the battle lines have already been drawn in this campaign. And it's going to be about the economy. It's going to be about the recession. And who are Ohio voters going to hold responsible for it? If you listen to the governor will say, well, you know, I inherited this problem from Wall Street. And look at the other states in the union who are also, you know, troubled by the same problems. But John Kasich has already said that, hey, there are other governors who maybe did more to try to head this off, and our governor hasn't. So, you know, there you are. I mean, we already see where this is headed.
But yes, but. It's interesting, too, that more of those polled blamed Wall Street for the meltdown, for the recession, than they did the governor, Karen. And, of course, we know that one of the arguments the Strickland folks will use against Kasich is his relationship with Wall Street.
Yeah, and I don't know how that's going to go over. I mean, they keep talking about Kasich having worked for Lehman Brothers, which was one of the early casualties in the financial meltdown there. And I don't know how much staying power and sticking power that's going to have over time, but that's certainly the message that we're going to hear from the Democrats. And this whole idea that Kasich is leading, Jim alluded to it. We've seen this in other polls where it's not necessarily that people like Kasich over Strickland. It's almost seems to be that anybody everybody but Strickland, because in the last Quinnipiac poll last year, like a tremendous number of people had never even heard of Kasich. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been a long time since he was a congressman. He briefly ran for president, I think, back in 1999 or something. But, you know, it certainly seems that that's the way that some voters are turning, that I don't like this guy, so this other guy just has to be better. So that'll be interesting to see how Kasich tries to build his name recognition and if he can actually hang on to a lead while building a name recognition while the Democrats are trying to define him in their way.
If you just joined us, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU, and my guests, we're talking State House stuff. My guests are Karen Kassler of the Ohio Public Radio, Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch, and Reggie Fields of the Plain Dealer. Jim will be blogging the governor's State of the State speech tomorrow. That's at, 10:50?
Noon.
That's at noon.
At noon.
Noon straight up.
Okay, I ought to be able to remember that. At noon. And also, you can tune into WOSU 820 NPR News tomorrow at noon for Governor Strickland's State of the State Address. We will have live special coverage from the State House News Bureau right here on WOSU 820. There will also be special coverage on television, too. You can tune into the Ohio Channel beginning at noon tomorrow. What about that State of the State? What do you say at a State of the State, the one just before you're trying to run for re-election?
We wish we knew. You know, that's one thing that Governor Strickland
people— They're very secretive, aren't they?
Yeah, well, at least at the State of the State they are. And this is his fourth one, and we have never gotten a advance copy of the speech. Now, if you go online during the State of the Union speech an hour before or whatever, you'll be able to see Obama's whole speech. And we always used to get Taft's speech before he would do his State of the State speech. And this is a Strickland tradition that can get a little frustrated, because it's not like we want to, you know, drop all his bombs for him. But, you know, it's nice to know what he's going to talk about. Certainly he's going to talk about the economy. Certainly he's going to talk about what everybody keeps talking about, the coming fiscal nightmare, the tidal wave, the tsunami, whatever people are calling this coming budget deficit. But other than that, there are certainly going to be specifics that he's going to bring up that we will be finding out along with everybody else. So it's always something you have to listen to carefully, which is fine. We always do anyway. But
but it helps, you know, to get your what do you make of it, Jim?
Well, a lot of times governors and Governor Taft kind of did this too. They start off on their first State of the State speeches, and they have a lot of big bold ideas, and they want to do big things and great things, and oftentimes spend great amounts of money. But then as things go on, economies turn. You start to realize you're running into walls. And now it's starting to happen with Governor Strickland as well. I mean, his last speech was the big, I'm going to fix education. I'm going to be the I'm going to fix the funding system. And well, here we are now today. We do certainly have a new school funding formula. But has he fixed anything? Well, it's hard to fix something when you have no money, especially when you're trying to fix the funding formula. So I'm sure he's going to talk about – one thing he'll talk about is his success in redoing the education funding system. However, there is definitely some arguments to be made that has anything really changed? I mean, schools certainly don't have any more money than you really had before. But now he's going to be he's on the hook for a system that's going to cost a lot of money over the next 8 years. And I'll be curious to hear if he addresses any of that as well.
Because if he doesn't do it, it's just another thing they can say, you promised and you didn't deliver.
Right.
Well, I think we are going to hear him talk about all the great stuff he has done, because you're already hearing that even when he goes to, you know, celebrate jobs coming to this plant or, you know, cut a ribbon over here. You're hearing him talk about, here are my successes. Here are the things that I've done. Mm-hmm. This is a campaign. It's not a campaign speech, because he is the governor and this is what he's supposed to do. But you'll hear that campaign flavor, I think, in there, talking about all the things that he's accomplished. And the idea of doing stuff without any money, I think you're probably going to hear about one program maybe that will sound really big but won't really cost any money. And I mean, Seniors to Sophomores program from a couple years ago comes to mind, where he was going to allow kids who were seniors in high school with a certain amount of credits to go and do some college courses. So that's the kind of thing that I think you could expect to hear a program like that maybe come out.
Yeah, I do think you're going to hear – I think you're going to hear a lot of elements of his campaign and things that he – as you mentioned earlier, Turnaround Ohio. And so – he's going to talk education, I'm sure. He's going to talk about, you know, the fact that we had to cut so many things, but we really didn't have to cut as deeply into education.
So, yeah, I mean, like we said, there's the tsunami coming.
Right,
there's
right.
billions more to cut, supposedly. How do you go into a campaign season making any promises at all when you don't even know how you're going to you know, batten down the hatches in the next 6 months.
I think he's going to use the – I mean, he did – I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Jim. He said before that he's going to seek more federal stimulus dollars and use his connections with the Obama campaign. I mean, you saw the visit that Obama did last week up in Northeast Ohio, and Strickland was right there at his elbow the entire time. He's going to try to use that to get us some more federal money. But he's not the only – we're not the only state in this boat. I mean, there are a lot of states that are going to be coming cup in hand to the federal government saying, we're not out of the woods yet. We need some help.
And actually, there's a number of states a lot worse off than we are in terms of their deficit as related to their total budget. So we have a big problem here coming up, but a lot of states are in a big problem right now, even with the federal stimulus money. So I think a lot of what he's going to talk about is here's what we won't do. Those kind of things. It's not what we will do. It's just here's what we won't do. We won't cut education further. We won't raise XYZ taxes, although good luck with that argument these days. And I think that could be part of it. And I think another big part of his campaign is going to be, okay, John Kasich, you're criticizing me. What would you have done differently? Because you know what I did? I kept almost the entire tax package that Republicans passed in 2005. I haven't changed any of the tort reform laws that you passed years ago that you said we're going to turn things around here. I've kept going a lot of the things that Republicans said in the early 2000s that these are the things we need to do to turn this economy around. And here we are. So what would you have done differently?
Well, of course, that's the beauty of running against an incumbent is you don't have to say anything about what you would do. So far, he hasn't said anything about what he would do. John Kasich hasn't, and except that he was endorsing at some point, and his now seems to be backing away from a Republican proposal in the House. Correct me to eliminate the Ohio's income tax.
That's been his campaign strategy
from the very beginning. But he seems to be sort of backing away.
Is it just my imagination?
Him?
No, no. In fact, I've asked several people, including the Ohio Republican Party chairman, about that, and that's still in his campaign toolbox, so to speak. But he's admitted that the timeline is going to be tough with the budget situation that we're facing right now. And there's an AP analysis that says that if he actually does this and it does go forward, it would blow a $12 billion hole in the budget or something like that. And you know, I think the thing that we're all waiting to hear is it a phase-in thing? If you're going to phase it in, how long is it going to be phased in? And whenever you try to phase something in, as we just saw with the Taft tax reforms from 2005, there's always the risk that if you're not in office at the end of the phase-in, it may never come to pass. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're going to, I think, hear from John Kasich. But the whole idea of, you know, Strickland standing up there and saying, I've done this, Republicans, what would you do? That's a message we have heard over and over and over in this campaign.
Nothing.
And, well, the idea of, you know, I've done this, what would you do? That's been the constant pushback that we've gotten.
Yeah, I was going to say, what I think you're probably sensing with him maybe backtracking a bit, it's not so much backtracking, but he's been critical, saying that maybe the media has portrayed it as if he were to be elected, the first day he takes office is going to be this cut. So he's saying that, no, it's going to be a phase in. But, you know, I'm not going to give you any details yet. You're just going to have to wait and see. Yeah. But it will be a phase in. We'll do it responsibly is what he's saying.
Okay. Well, I have to say, too, that a whole idea of, you know, I'm not going to give as many details. I mean, Strickland kind of did that in the last campaign.
Yeah, I was going to say,
I'm going to turn around Ohio, but I have some things I'm going to hold until after the election. And so that's going to be the challenge here is to get Mr. Kasich to explain exactly what the details of the phase-in are. And you know, if you're going to cut $12 billion from the state budget over time, that implies you're going to get rid of agencies. You're going to do something very drastic and people might want to know what that is.
Maybe we'll find out. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. If you have a question or comment for the State House News Panel, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let us know what you think we should do to repair a $12 billion hole in the budget if an income tax cut comes to pass. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. It's another thing.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation. Clear, straight, Open from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation will be here this afternoon at 2 o'clock on today's edition of the program, Bill Gates on Global Health, Haiti, and the Road Ahead. Bill Gates on Talk of the Nation at 2 o'clock, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. 36 degrees in downtown Columbus, cloudy skies today, rain mixing with a little snow and temperatures falling this afternoon. Cloudy skies tonight and possible snow showers, less than half an inch of accumulation, a low of 25 degrees tonight. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guests are Karen Kassler of Ohio Public Radio, Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch, and Reggie Fields of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Another turn of events last week, the running mates. Lieutenant Governor running mates State Auditor Mary Taylor for John Kasich and former Franklin County Common Pleas Judge Yvette McGee Brown for Strickland. How does that all shake out for you, Reggie? What do you think?
I don't know. I think both picks were to try to shore up their base, essentially. I think Strickland had probably suffered some problems since he has been in office with a lot of the African Americans, voters out there. And so I think this is a good pick to help shore up that particular base. Also, I think they're both going after the independent, female vote out there, which I think is also going to be helpful. With Mary Taylor being from Northeast Ohio, certainly I'm sure that the Republicans are hoping to be able to, pull a few votes out of Northeast Ohio, which has largely been sort of a Democratic stronghold, from the voting standpoint. But I don't know that that is as important as to maybe be able to just pull some of those independent swing votes, which we know in Ohio and certainly is proven across the country in other elections as being, the key, for success, as we have seen lately.
Is this the first time we have two women?
No.
Okay.
No, Taft had Jeanette Bradley and Tim Hagen had Charlita Tavares back
in
2002.
Okay.
But I think it helps both candidates tap into an awful lot of passion and money on both sides. Mary Taylor has a lot of support from the Tea Party folks, the people who are very hard on spending and these sorts of issues. And then McGee Brown helps to tap into a lot of resources because of her years as a fundraiser, her years as an activist. I think both of those candidates help each side kind of reach out to those areas that, the Tea Party folks seem to lean more right, but they are independent in a sense. And then, of course, the vast resources that McGee Brown knows in terms of the fundraising community and the activist community.
I thought both picks were kind of unconventional in that here you have Mary Taylor, the sitting state auditor. I mean, it's just very strange for a sitting state office holder to then move not to the governor's race, but to the lieutenant governor.
Right.
That's really a lateral move at best, probably a step down. She was not a good fundraiser politically. She did a lousy job, to be honest with you.
Which meant she was in a precarious position as a state auditor.
Right. Which, I mean, even if you ask some in the Republican Party privately, they were not happy at all with the effort she was putting in her own reelection campaign. So moving her over gets the spotlight off of her and doesn't give her quite as much responsibility on the political end. But it did leave them it left the Republicans an open seat in an auditor's seat that's also on the state apportionment board, which is the board that also includes the governor and secretary of state. If you control two out of those three seats, you get to draw the legislative districts.
Assuming no reform in that direction, yeah, and it looks good. There will not be any reform.
We can assume that, I think.
Yeah, go on.
So that was curious. And then on the other side, I mean, Yvette McGee Brown is she's just not a politician. She just hasn't been in elected office. I'm not sure at any level. So that was also a curious choice. So both of them go a little unconventional for different reasons.
Yeah. Now, Mary Taylor, you mentioned the fundraising. She was running for U.S. Senate a year ago. I mean, and so I wonder how much she really wanted to be reelected auditor. So at least this is another opportunity for her to go in a different direction. And, I don't know how often the stats show that the lieutenant governor eventually becomes the governor of Ohio, but I wonder how committed she really was to being the auditor again, because I think she really had wanted to enter that U.S. Senate race. But Rob Portman was definitely the guy for
I find that curious, too, because Mary Taylor made such a big deal about having a CPA as a state auditor, and she is a CPA.
Right.
And so we finally get a CPA as a state auditor, and she immediately says, let's go look for something else to do. So.
It is unusual, but it does make you wonder about her ability to get reelected or raise money for a reelection campaign, because she was doing so poorly on that.
Is it about CPAs? I mean, not to totally switch the subject here.
You know,
I mean, doesn't Seth Morgan have a CPA, and he just announced for auditor, and now you have
state
reports.
Representative, yeah.
Yeah, State Representative Seth Morgan from the Dayton area just announced last week that he was running for auditor. Now there are reports that the Republican Party is going to ask Dave Yost, who's in the Attorney General's race, to move over and run for auditor. So what is with the CPA?
Well, everyone's running for sheriff and bookkeeper in Ohio. Right? Watching the purse strings and keeping law and order in its place. You know, we were talking a second ago about it makes me wonder about Lee Fisher and his role and what he's done as far as the role of lieutenant governor. He's been pretty much was absent for much of the term now at running for U.S. Senate.
He's at a lot of ceremonial things. I mean, because he did resign as the head of the Department of Development, but he is still lieutenant governor. And so, you know, he was up with Obama last week and whatever. So you will see him at ceremonial.
But that's politics.
Things, of course.
Yeah.
Yes. That's, you know, up until the last, 10, 15 years, the lieutenant governor didn't have another role other than to just be lieutenant governor. And so I think, you know, Lee Fisher's gone back to that role, but.
And he took a pay cut.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Well, that's because he was development director.
Yes.
But that was only because Ted Strickland made him development director. I mean, like you said, Karen, when you're lieutenant governor, you have no job. Your job is to sit there and wait and see if the governor lives for 4 years. Beyond that, you don't have any responsibility unless the governor gives you some. And for the past few governors, they've been given –
sort of turned around in Voight Image's administration.
Yeah, they've been given the task of running one of the departments. So.
I mean, it's typical for the lieutenant governor candidates. People are voting for the governor. That's who they're voting for when it comes down to it. It's not so much the lieutenant governor. So you're picking someone who's able to bring something else to the table. And speaking of Lee Fisher, one of the things that he did do well when Strickland picked him as his lieutenant governor was he was a good fundraiser. Mm-hmm. And so that allowed and so you didn't see Lee Fisher on the campaign trail very often when Strickland was running in 2006. The thought was that he was, you know, busy raising money while Strickland was out being the face of their ticket.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. You could give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Have your question or comment about the upcoming elections, maybe the State of the State address tomorrow. Who knows? I'm wondering about Twitter, Facebook, social media impact on the race. I mean, really, the whole social media thing's been around since John Dean. It's not necessarily new, but it seems new in the governor's race this year.
Oh, yeah. And I think there's an idea of we got to tap into the you're seeing it like with the Haiti donations, you know, that's how young people are communicating and getting involved. Right. And I think, you know, with Obama, what he did with text messaging and everything was incredible. And so I think both parties are saying we need to tap into that. And so, hey, let's skirt the regular media and go to our supporters first and introduce our running mates. And then we'll have the press conference and do that whole thing. So I think there's an idea of trying to bring supporters in as some sort of insider through social networking. And, you know, but still, we all knew their candidates were going to be before they announced it on Twitter or through email anyway. So I don't know.
Is it just look good? Does it affect the base at all?
I think it does, because I do think that people feel a sense of, as Karen is saying, you feel like you're an insider. You feel like you're getting some information first. And so I think it really caught political fire probably in 2008 when Obama was running and he amassed this really large email and social media group that he used to his advantage at that point. And but obviously it's not, you know, Democratic exclusive, because now we're seeing Democrats and Republicans alike doing it. John Kasich, before he, you know, formally announced Mary Taylor an hour and a half earlier, sent it out on his Twitter account first. So I think it's something that's going to be here to stay for a little while. I mean, you know, anything that helps you make a connection with the voters can't, you know, be all terrible.
Yeah.
And with potential contributors.
Right.
Of course.
Yeah. And I agree. I think everyone needs to start tapping into it now. But in terms of the, you know, just how effective it is, I mean, I do think it can help energize, as Reggie said, get your base going, get some young people who support you going. I'm not sure how far it reaches, you know, gets you into new voters or new supporters. I think a lot of it does turn into, you know, you're preaching to the choir. I mean, the people who follow you on Facebook tend to be your supporters.
They agree with you.
They don't tend to be the independent youth who just, well, maybe I'll go and sign up for all these politicians' websites so they can all, you know, bombard me with interesting little statements and facts. And I did find interesting Kasich. He made a big issue. He was going to announce on Twitter that he was going to announce his running mate. But as Karen said, everyone had reported it already, so he wasn't reporting anything new.
But it sounded groovy.
And the big Twitter that came out had a typo in it.
Oh,
so it was after all this.
God, don't edit my Twitter.
After all this buildup for two or three days about this great tweet that was going to come out, it had a typo. It was only like 10 words long, and the last word was misspelled.
And those of us in the print media, that's so irritating.
And broadcast, we don't even notice. So you know.
You know. We touched on a little bit earlier the whole issue about redistricting. It looks like it's fallen by the wayside. Why is that? Why couldn't they get it done? Because it's going to be another 10 years now. Jim?
It's hard to say. I mean, everybody talks about it. It's really – if you listen to the leaders, you listen to some of the legislators talk, you'd think, oh, well, this is going to get done.
Well, everybody seemed to agree.
Everybody loves redistricting. Everybody wants fair, drawn districts. Everybody wants to take politics out of it. No, they don't. They don't.
Not when you're.
They like the politics in it.
When you're in control, or not when you think you might regain control.
Exactly.
Is that what changed? Maybe the Republicans.
Well, I mean, there are some true believers out there.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
I know John Husted has been fighting for this for a while, and he's got the bill that passed the Senate. But a lot of them just give it lip service, and they don't. And it's hard for even those who do agree can't agree on the details.
Now, for this to take effect, they would have to enact the legislation. Would have to be signed by the governor by February 3rd.
You mean to go to the ballot for the May ballot?
Yeah,
yes,
right.
Yes,
February 3rd, just like the casino issue, the same
timeline. And you see how fast that's moving.
Yeah.
I mean, when you compare the difference between the two, you saw once they got the deal at the Delphi plan, mm-hmm. how fast that just got on just a speed rail through the legislature.
So when they want to, they can move things.
Absolutely. Well, in the last year, even with the Livestock Care Standards Board, mm-hmm. the issue two, I mean, once it got into the legislature, there was no stopping it because it was going to the ballot. And yes, once things – when everybody's in agreement that we want to do this and they really want to do it, it can happen very quickly. I mean, it can happen so quickly that people get irritated and angry and wonder not only why aren't other things moving, but also are we really fully vetting these things?
I mean, you touched on it earlier. It's all politically driven. I mean, if the Democrats feel that they're going to have an opportunity to retain or regain the apportionment board, then there's really no reason why they should be so, you know, gung-ho about going forward with the redistricting plan through the legislature.
Yeah, and there's this whole thing. Well, they hosed us last time, so we want right. to hose them this time.
Well, that's the way it's gone, ad nauseum. I mean, 20 years ago, it was the same thing.
Right.
So it's exactly the same thing. And they're very earnest when they say it, too. In fact, some of the people are the same earnest people that were saying it 20 years ago. Some things never changed.
Well, I went to a Republican leadership news conference where one or even all of them were saying, hey, you know, the winner, to the victor goes the spoils. And so whoever wins gets a certain amount of ability to draw the lines. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. I mean, we all thought that, but to say it, that's interesting.
You almost have to respect it.
refreshing honesty. That's great.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Tyler, do you have an idea for raising money in Ohio?
It was more a question.
Okay.
With the whole medicinal marijuana thing that has been, as it's kind of gaining more ground in the U.S., and mm-hmm. I know Michigan just passed it recently, mm-hmm. I've heard some more grumblings in Ohio about it. And, I just wanted to hear kind of from the horse's mouth, are there actually talks of it in Ohio? And then if there are, what your panel's thoughts are on that raising money for the deficit, you know, along with other ideas. Obviously, that isn't the end-all, be-all, but, you know, it's just something that I have heard and was just curious.
Yeah, I suppose the end-all, be-all, neither is raising fees on beauticians, but they do things like that, too.
Sure.
So what do you guys think?
Well, the bill's been around for a couple sessions, the medical marijuana bill.
Several,
it,
yeah.
Yeah, they just it hasn't gotten any traction at all other than maybe like one hearing.
Why is that? I mean, they can do it in Michigan. But...
Well, I just think there's a number of legislators, Republicans particularly, who just don't agree that marijuana should become legalized.
In any way.
In any way. So I think it's just there's a philosophical debate there. In terms of raising money, we are facing a unprecedented deficit in the next 2-year budget, and who knows what may come up as
casinos
an idea.
Casinos we'll have casinos in Ohio. They said that couldn't be done 20 years ago.
Yep. So you never know.
And we're all mute on the subject otherwise, right, guys? I'm not saying anything.
The issue 3 has passed, the casinos are still being built. So I don't know what year they will all be in place and up and running and how much money by that point they can expect to bring in.
I think,
and most of the money actually goes to communities, not to the state.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I mean, Ohio has historically been very conservative, and which is why it took so long for us to get casino. We had to wait until the economy was this terrible before you finally get something like that across. And I think something like a medical marijuana, you know, sort of legislation, as Jim said, you know, it's been hanging around for a while. There's been different sponsors for different bills, and they've never gone anywhere. And it's just going to take something really drastic, you know, as we saw with the casinos, with a terrible economy, before you even see any movement on a topic like that, I believe.
I'm all in a dither because I just found out that Doug Price is listening, and he says I made a mistake in my statement on what John Kasich's position is on something. Hi, Doug.
Hey, hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to call in on, I think, which was a bit of a mischaracterization of John's stance on the income tax.
Okay.
There has been some confusion because State Representative John Adams has indeed proposed legislation which would phase out the income tax, I think 10% each year over 10 years. John Kasich has no position on that bill. He has indeed talked about an eventual look at phase out over time with no specific timeline. Indeed, in the sponsor testimony of a few days ago, Representative Adams confirmed that he's not talked to John Kasich about it and has no indication one way or another of his stance on that. So I just wanted to correct that because John is indeed talking about phasing out the income tax, but
yeah,
certainly is talking about stabilizing the patient, as he says, the finances of the state before looking, real specifically.
Yeah, absolutely understand. If it came across that way, I didn't mean it to, because clearly he hasn't officially endorsed the legislation, but he's endorsed the concept of phasing out the income tax.
The concept, indeed, but with the details to follow. One other point I'd like to make is that on the question of Mary Taylor, the new Taylor lieutenant governor candidacy, Mary actually raised and spent more in the auditor's race in her go-around last time than any previous auditor candidate. So to say she's not been a good fundraiser isn't exactly correct. She got a little late start this last time. It was mentioned earlier she was looking at the state rather than the United States Senate race. That's true. But, you know, she was up and running, and the reason she was picked was because she was the, you know, effective incumbent state auditor holding this administration's feet to the fire, and it's a strong ticket.
Yeah, but Doug, you know, you expect maybe some fundraising struggles when you're running against an incumbent and you're running for this office for the first time. But when you're the sitting incumbent, I guess that's what folks kind of noticed, what raised the eyebrows, is she wasn't, you know, pulling in the money as the incumbent.
Well, she had a good campaign going. And as I say, looking at the candidate who raised the most and spent the most effectively and was the only Republican to win statewide in 2006, I think is a better indication of what she's capable of on the finance and political front, and certainly her professional record in the office is of a sterling nature. So
yeah, she can.
We're
count
all
the
pretty
beans.
Happy about her candidacy for lieutenant governor.
Okay, thanks for calling, Doug. Thanks for listening.
Okay, Doug. Thanks.
Take care. Yeah,
Franklin County Republican Party.
I know.
There you go.
No less. All right. So unemployment. Is there any hope for the state? What are they talking about in the legislature regarding that? Shouldn't there be like scores of jobs bills, job creation bills being introduced like there were about 10, 12 years ago?
Well, they've – I don't know. I mean, they've been doing it. That's the problem in Ohio. They've been running out a lot of – you know, they've been doing a lot of tax credits. They've got the Third Frontier program that they're trying to get extended. That's currently sitting in the legislature.
Right.
We'll probably move here shortly, put that back on the ballot. That's to help fund startup companies that are in high-tech fields. But, I mean, you know, at some point – I don't know what you do. I mean, government can only do so much when it comes to job creation. And in fact, some would argue that they can do very little in terms of job creation, more than get out of the way. So it's I'm not sure. I'm sure Governor Strickland tomorrow will tell us some more of his ideas of what more we could do. But there are still projections that 10.9% is not the end. It's going to go into the mid 11% before we start to see a
Mm-hmm. Why don't we get back to that when we get back from the short break? This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Join WOSU Public Media today by becoming a volunteer. WOSU's Winter Pledge Drive is coming up, and we need your help. Answer calls from WOSU listeners like you this February. From February 4th to February 12th, there are many opportunities for you to help out. For more information, including dates and times, call 292-9678 or visit wosu.org/volunteer.
And good morning. You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here, and a conversation with Ohio Historical Society Executive Director Bert Logan. That discussion begins at 11. And be sure to tune in tomorrow at noon for Governor Strickland's State of the State Address. Listen live as the governor details his plan for Ohio's future. After the speech, hear reaction from a variety of key lawmakers. Tune in for this live special coverage of the governor's State of the State Address from the State House News Bureau tomorrow at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. 36 degrees in downtown Columbus. Cloudy skies today with rain mixing with snow possible as temperatures fall this afternoon. Cloudy skies tonight and a low of 25 for tonight. Cloudy for Tuesday and a good chance of maybe a half an inch of snow and a high of 30 degrees tomorrow. Also, the National Weather Service has issued a flood warning for Pickaway County in Ohio until 3 o'clock this afternoon. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU. My guests today, Kieran Kassler of Ohio Public Radio, Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch, and Reggie Fields of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. We were talking about jobs and the shortage thereof.
Yeah.
Kieran.
I was at Governor Strickland's event back last Monday. It was Martin Luther King Day. He was down in Circleville announcing some 70 new jobs at the DuPont plant down there. And I asked him, you know, there's a lot of perception that Ohio is a high-tax, anti-business state. And, you know, he answered me that that's old information and we've done a lot of changes. And even though the Wall Street Journal says that, that's not necessarily true. But I think that is a perception that's out there about Ohio, is that Ohio is a bad place to do business for whatever reason. And, you know, statistics can say whatever you want them to say in terms of what we're doing with regard to taxes and changing that. But that is a perception that's out there. Whether it's accurate or not is your own idea. But that's hard to battle that when you're trying to raise jobs and move Ohio into a different level. I mean, we've lost a lot of manufacturing jobs. We're trying to move the state into another venue, so to speak. And then to fight that on top of it is really tough.
The economy and its relationship to the governor's race is obvious. Does that translate into the down ticket races? For instance, attorney general, we have an appointed attorney general, Richard Cordray, I guess running as a seated attorney general, kind of like an incumbent, against Mike DeWine, former U.S. senator. How's that race going?
Well, I think we're still waiting for DeWine to kind of get going in this race. I mean, he hasn't really done a lot. And also, he still has, for the moment anyhow, he still has another Republican challenger right. in that regard with David Yost, who's an attorney general for Delaware County.
He's county prosecutor in Delaware County.
County prosecutor. Yeah, thank you. Now, interesting, Mr. Yost has a press conference later today at the Ohio Republican Party headquarters. And so it'd be interesting what he says today, because there has been some speculation that perhaps the party leaders have finally convinced him to leave the attorney general race, leave it to Mike DeWine. David Yost would potentially then run for state auditor. And we know that Seth Morgan, a state lawmaker, last week announced on a Republican side for state auditor, who also happens to be a CPA that he pointed out. But, the Republicans were very lukewarm to that. I mean, he got a very chilly reception, so it didn't quite seem like his decision kind of fell in line with whatever the grand scheme, of the party might have been at that time. So if all shakes out, then I would guess with the filing deadline coming up within the next few weeks in early or mid February, I think we'll finally get to see a race. Meanwhile, I think Richard Cordray has been campaigning pretty much since he took office mm-hmm. and when he was appointed to the office. I mean, nothing goes by a news headline or whatever that his office doesn't send out a press release saying that, he's looking into it now. So
yeah, he makes it sound like he's trying to single-handedly balance the budget with all the settlement emails that he's sending out.
We have an email from someone saying Yvette McGee Brown was elected domestic relations juvenile judge. I misspoke earlier. Thanks for all the corrections today. I really appreciate them.
It's been a long time, though. I mean, yeah. I think we've all kind of hinted that she's not as much. I mean, I've said it on the air that has never run for statewide office, which is true.
Right.
Now, Mary Taylor obviously has because she's currently the auditor. But yeah, it's been a long time since Yvette McGee Brown was on the ballot.
Okay. Any other thoughts about the attorney general race? Rich Cordray, danger?
It's hard to say he's in danger yet. Like Reggie said, I don't know if we've seen much from Mr. DeWine yet in his campaign. I mean, as far as I can tell, Rich Cordray hasn't done a lot that you can beat him up for, except maybe that he took over from Mark Dan, which you could certainly try to link him to some of that problem. But yeah, I think it'll be good for the Republicans if they can get Yost out of that race against DeWine. It'll be good for DeWine. DeWine's kind of the establishment guy. Yost is sort of the Tea Party conservative guy. He's actually gotten some endorsements from some of the more conservative counties in Ohio, which is a real shot at DeWine. So it's I think it'd be good for the Republicans if they
just as an observation. It's interesting now that the ticket is set for all statewide offices, all five offices. None of the candidates are from Northeast or Northwest Ohio. And I only point that out only because, those are areas that typically have been very strong for Democrats. But to not have any candidates from those areas, I just think it's kind of interesting. I don't know if that means you're taking that vote for granted or you just weren't able to find candidates from those areas. I mean,
well,
that
would run very well in the Franklin County, Central Ohio Republican stronghold, however.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, though, I think in part of that, I think is all the county corruption in Cuyahoga County.
That
was one of the things when Strickland was trying to pick a candidate. You can almost cross off 12 names because they all have connections to all this corruption in Cuyahoga County, right. And you can't possibly put somebody like that on your ticket. It's just poison. So I think a lot of that really hurt. Now, that's not necessarily Northwest Ohio and Toledo. I know Representative Matt Salazzi, who's a good fundraiser in the Democratic caucus in the House. His name was mentioned also, but I do think that weighs into it a lot.
No, I totally agree. I mean, I was going to follow up with that very point. I'm sure they vetted quite a few names from Northeast Ohio and probably – I mean, so many people are tied into that corruption in Cuyahoga County that it almost makes it impossible. So it's probably better to kind of stay away from Northeast Ohio right now.
Because I love every time the Plain Dealer writes a story about something going on there. It's not just it's sort of like here's this person involved, but, they're related to this person who's married to that person and that department
who hired
this person.
Right,
brother
right.
And cousin. Everybody's connected in that in county government over there.
It's kind of like you always thought it was, but they're drawing the lines now.
I think it's interesting that the only person from Northeast Ohio who will appear on the ballot right now is Josh Mandel, who's running on the Republican ticket for treasurer. treasurer. So that's interesting that, you know, that Cuyahoga County has always been run by Democrats and dominated by Democrats, and the only Northeast Ohio person on the statewide ballot next time will be a Republican. So,
well, of course, that's where George Voinovich is from. So,
well, that's sure.
And
sure.
He were, you know, that can almost be magic in certain years. Maybe this is the year. Mm.
Well, and I think the David Yost getting out of the Mike DeWine race, it really takes away you still have smaller primary battles that will happen here in May, but that was really the highest profile one on the Republican side, I think. I mean, Portman's still running against Tom Ganley, who's also from Northeast Ohio, the car dealer. But that really takes away probably what was going to be the biggest name battle on the Republican side in the primary. And so now the biggest battle I think that we will all be focusing on for the May primary is going to be Lee Fisher and Jennifer Bruner on the Democratic side for U.S. Senate.
Okay, we've got about 10 minutes left, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org to speak with one of the panelists on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU. Let's talk about casino. You knew it was coming. Okay, the legislation was being drawn up even as, you know, we waited, you know, on tenterhooks to find out what they were going to do with the West Side idea. Penn National Gaming decided, yeah, all right, we'll go with this, the vacant Delphi plant site. And now it has to go through the legislature. How's that going, Jim?
Well, it's going as most legislation has been going this session. It's awkward.
That's a great word.
You know, everyone agrees. It's one of those, another one of those issues. Everyone agrees on what needs to be done. Now it's a matter of how they do it and who gets credit. The Senate is moving their version of the resolution, which is a resolution needs a 3/5 vote in each chamber to make the ballot.
Which is more than usual.
Yes. So they're moving their resolution. The House is moving a nearly identical resolution. They're going to both pass their resolutions, I think, tomorrow. That's the plan. And then they'll have to figure out, well, okay, one of these has to be passed by the other chamber. So they'll have to decide on who's going to do that. Maybe they've worked it out already, but as of Friday when I talked to them, they had not. So I think it'll get done. It's just it's just a matter of, you know, making the process work.
But the point's been made that not everybody's all gung-ho about this necessarily, and they could use it for some leverage from other things.
Well, it does have to pass on the statewide level.
Right.
And so there is a good, you know, there's always the possibility, because elections are weird, that it might not happen. And so that would put it back into the arena district and suddenly put everybody back into this defensive position. Okay, what do we do now? So, you know, regardless of what happens tomorrow or in the next couple of weeks, it does eventually go back to the voters and they get the final say, as they did in creating casinos in the first place.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest problems that lies ahead is who's going to pay for the campaign?
Yeah, I didn't see an answer to that.
And I mean, because as Karen has said, I mean, right now we're just talking about legislation, and I do believe it'll get done, because there are too many lawmakers who reside outside of Columbus who's don't really care.
Yeah,
so
but
it's
there's
no
Bob Hagan. He shouldn't care, but he's from Youngstown, and he's
cares. Irritated.
He's
cared. He wants a casino in Youngstown.
Why can't we be more self-determining
over
there?
I mean, you're going to find some people who have reasons to try to want to block it.
But not
there's
enough.
One from Northeast Ohio even who wants to block it now because he says, well, let's tie in some more because the tax rate on it is too low. I mean, it's, nothing like that is going to pass. So I think ultimately it will. So then you get to the next question, which is who is going to pay for a statewide campaign to convince the other 87 counties to kind of go along with this plan?
Because slapping it on the ballot won't be enough.
Well, wouldn't you expect Penn National to put some money if they feel that there is an organized opposition? Because I don't think they want to go back and fight with the arena district opposition, because it, you know, if it goes back to the arena district, you can certainly expect there are going to be a lot of roadblocks thrown up and a lot of obstacles that are going to be created.
But I kind of think that Penn National feels that, you know, that they've kind of gone along. They've tried to play ball. We're going along. We're going to put some money up to help with this campaign. And if it fails, I would guess that they're going to hope that the Columbus business leaders will step aside and get out of their way and let them go along with the arena district, because they did everything that they've been asked to do.
Is it agreed upon that they acted in good faith this time, and if it doesn't go through, no one can blame Penn National?
I'm pretty sure. Well, and it'll be telling, depending on how much Penn National puts into the campaign, that'll tell you whether they really want to move or if they just really want to get the leaders and the business leaders and the city leaders out of their hair. And if they, you know, if they really want to move, if they really think that's a better site, then they'll put a couple million into the campaign, I think. If they just, you know, if it's we don't care which site we pick, it's just, you know, then they probably won't put a lot into it.
Well, I'm wondering if they really wanted to move, why didn't they just pick that spot in the first place? I mean, the Delphi plant had been closed for several years.
It's so obvious.
Right. I don't know why they would have picked the Arena District knowing that that was going to be a hot potato, so to speak. But, you know, I think this is a deal that at least looks good and everybody seems to be behind it. But the question now is you got to get 87. Well, you got to get this county behind it. 58% of this county voted against the casino in the first place. You got to now convince them that this is good to move it. So I'm wondering how they're going to get not only the 87 other counties, but also this county to make sure that it passes at least here.
There's talk, too. I mean, people in other cities are like, wait a minute. We didn't get a chance to decide where the casino is going to go. Why should Columbus? A little bit of resentment about Central Ohio. It, of all the places in Ohio, it still seems to be relatively flourishing.
Right. And I think that's part of it, too. It's, you know, why does Columbus once again seem to get, a better deal than we're getting? So I do think there could be some vote, some no vote for that reason. And as Reggie said, nobody's going to care outside of Columbus. So they got to have a reason to vote one way or another.
I was just going to say also consider that where the other three casinos are, the measure actually passed in those particular counties and in those particular cities. So, not again, you're going to find people who are maybe against it, for instance, in the Cleveland area. But for the most part, I think people in Cleveland are happy with the idea that if we're going to have a casino, then it is going to be in a downtown location, which is where the Cleveland one would be located.
What about outside forces? Not that casino interests have ever voted or worked against each other before in the state of Ohio. In fact, it's been almost a constant part of the landscape. But what about outside forces? What vested interest would they have in slowing down this process and slowing down the building of the casino in Columbus?
Not sure they'd have much. And Jeff Jacobs of MTR Gaming, who put in all the money for the opposition campaign last year, says he's going to sit this one out. He says he sees no reason to come in and fight over where the casino is located. That doesn't have any impact on him. I doubt the horse tracks are going to get too involved. You know, you've got the Ohio Roundtable, which is anti-gambling. I haven't heard from them whether they've said they're going to do anything or not. But if they don't get back, if they don't get money, then they won't have much campaign. And frankly, I can't imagine why anyone would use a lot of resources and time on this. I mean, it's not stopping a casino; it's just moving it. And if you don't like casinos, this is not the battle to put your resources into.
My colleague Bill Cohen actually talked to the Ohio Roundtable, who said, "Hey, we're not happy about any of this. This shows that this is just a bunch of backroom dealing." And they didn't expressly say though that they're going to urge people to vote no. So.
We have an email from Trevor. If you'd like to email us, we have about 30 seconds left, 614@allsides.wosu.org. It's from Trevor. He says, first, Yvette McGee Brown has held elective office, which we established. Yes, you're right, Trevor. Second, Cordray was not appointed but won election in November 2008.
That is true, yes.
True.
Yes, yes.
Third, if you're going to suggest that Cordray is tainted by Mark Dan, don't you have a responsibility to then make your case? So
I think that there's been connections drawn only because they were both Democratic office holders. But, you know, Richard Cordray, I think, tried very hard in the campaign to say, I'm not Mark Dan. I'm not going to even, you know, I'm not going to run my office that way. I don't even want to talk about Mark Dan.
Yeah, and I wasn't saying there was any connection. I'm just saying this doesn't mean the Republicans aren't going to make it.
Yeah.
They've done it. But I mean, both sides have done that. Any weak link they can find, any loose thread.
Well, there are pictures of Mark Dan and Rich Cordray at events, but that's just because they're both Democratic office holders.
You've been listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My thanks to Karen Kassler, Jim Siegel, and Reggie Fields. I appreciate you being here today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.